Can a survey change the future? Maybe this one can. Cannabis education is inconsistent at best and missing or misleading at worst. How can we make cannabis education better? What if we ask people who use or are thinking about using cannabis a bunch of questions? What if we ask pharmacists who could be teaching people about cannabis a bunch of questions? And then, what if the answers from those questions were used to help pharmacists teach people about cannabis better? Well, this is exactly what pharmacists as cannabis educators, or PACE, are doing. And PACE needs you to fill out a survey. PACE needs as many people as possible to fill out a survey. PACE needs you to fill out a survey on or before May 12th. This is a limited time offer for you to help change the future of cannabis education. To participate, go to promo.reefermed.ca. That's promo, promo.reefermed.ca.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
Hey, Trevor, how are you?
Good. All right, I'm going to out you a little bit. We were playing around a little bit before we started recording, and we had a Kirk, you're on Zoom moment. Because, you know, it's hot here today, and you came onto the Zoom call au naturel.
Well, not totally. I had my pants on. No, I'm in my basement. I'm converting our a space in the basement as a full-time office. It's nice and cool down here. And I was upstairs on the dining room table, and I was doing some work preparing for a talk. And yes, I may have been without a shirt.
It's all good, man. Yes. It's all good.
You know, this is our second episode on Lyme disease, and it's timely for me and Michelle. We have a dog. We have a large medium-sized dog who likes to run. So we often find ourselves walking in tall grass long distances with our dog. So the dog naturally brings home
ticks,
and also as we do. And it's become a little bit of a game for us, and not necessarily a fun game, but we try to outdo each other with the number of ticks that we bring back from our walk. So we do a couple checks. The first check is that as we're walking and they're crawling up your leg, you pick them off and you try to kill them as you go. When you get back to the vehicle, you know, you dump the dog into the back of the vehicle. Now the dog is on tick medicine, so the ticks dry up and fall off the dog. But then we will go through, quickly de-tick ourselves before we get into the car. Then we come home and, you know, again, you change your clothes and check your clothing for ticks. It's become quite a routine for us. And last night, I mean, I think we counted about 6 ticks on me and about 8 ticks on Michelle. Last night, as we're dozing off, I hear this streak. I got a goddamn tick. And sure enough, Michelle rips a tick off, not rips it, but there's a tick on her leg. She takes the tick off, and then she's up half the night tick. So we found 3 ticks in the bed last night. So, I mean, these are ticks that have not attached themselves to us, which is nice. But this is a very timely one for us.
It is. And as usual, I think Michelle's a nicer person than my lovely wife. My lovely wife and woke up in the middle of the night a while ago with a tick, and it was near her pillow. So instead of just, you know, getting rid of it, she flicked it onto me because, you know, then it'll be Trevor's problem. Anyway, and neither of us are tick experts, but just to throw out, most of what you and Michelle found were wood ticks. And the one we're supposed to be more concerned about for Lyme disease is the black-legged tick. And unfortunately, they are tiny. Picture a black sesame seed with legs. So they are very easy to miss. But anyway, again, they're
here. We have Lyme in our district. It's I've been all things Lyme for the last couple of days, reading on stuff. And Brent's a layman, but he lives with Lyme, so he knows a lot about Lyme, and I did a lot of following up. So Lyme's not a disease you want. So we have this fellow, yep. And he'll introduce himself. So we'll let him introduce himself now.
Hey, I'm Brent Allery from the band Wreck and Soap.
Yeah, so Brent has been to the WAC. I've met him. He's a musician. I did not know a lot about him before.
If you're not from Dauphin, what's the WAC?
Oh, the Watson Art Center, which the Watson, it's Art Center. I think we've mentioned it many times in the 4 years we've been doing this.
We have, but it's one of our nicest performance spaces in Dauphin.
Brent played here with his Southern rock band, Wrecking So. Good guitar driving Southern rock and roll. Really, really enjoyed this the set he did in Dauphin, and he picked up on our podcast, so he is a listener of this podcast, and I've been promising him an episode for a while, and with all the walks and the ticks, I thought of him, and I threw out a message on Instagram and said, "Hey man, you still interested?" And he said, "Yes." So this is our interview. Is there anything up front you want to mention about it before we start?
Well, there's so much, and he obviously does a better job than me explaining what's going on with him, but just things to listen to when you're listening for a story, you know, how long between he started having symptoms and he got diagnosed. The fact he was a very anti-drug in general and cannabis in particular before this happened. Just, it's a, on top of everything else Lyme related, it's just a really interesting My Cannabis story.
Exactly. It is a My Cannabis story. And I guess the caveat I want to throw out here is that, you and I are not by any means Lyme experts. I've done some studying on it. It's a very insidious disease. For a person to have Lyme undiagnosed for several years is not, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing.
Also not uncommon. Again, not Lyme experts, but you and I see people,
yes,
through our work and whatnot. I can name three or four other people that I've run into that it seems to be more common than you'd think to have miscellaneous weird symptoms for, unfortunately, months to years before it gets nailed down to Lyme.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think doctors are more aware of it now. For example, last year, when we had our new COVID puppy, we went for walks, and sure enough, we did have a bozi rash discovered on us, and on antibiotics for about 4 or 5 weeks, hammering it. And I guess the thing is that as I read more about Lyme, is that it's very difficult to diagnose because of the bacterium. So I guess let's get into Brent's discussion,
yeah,
and then we'll come out of it.
Okay.
Wrecking So, you are Canada's southern. What do you call yourself? Southern.
Yeah, right now I'm going by Canada's Southern Rock Band.
Yeah, yeah. You played the WAC a few years ago, and I really enjoyed you guys. And
we want to be back. We want to come back there. We got an entire Southern Rock show we're working on, and it's going to be different than what we've done before. It's going to be real Southern Rock with all the players and, you know, the unison guitar solos and the harmonies and the backup singing and all that stuff.
So you are a full-time musician who makes your living off of playing music, yeah?
Well, that's the direction it was going until the pandemic. And now I'm because of Lyme disease, I can only work, I can't do what I was doing. Construction, okay. Right? So I got to find a new career path, and I was hoping that it would be music, and it was going that way until everything shut down. With between music and acting, I was pretty busy.
Yeah.
So let's hope we can do that. I would like to make that my goal in my career, definitely.
Okay, so let's just get right into the conversation. When did you first, I guess there's a couple things here. When did you get diagnosed with Lyme? But then how long before you actually had the confrontation with the tick did that all happen? Why don't you just start the story from there?
So I first got started getting sick in 2008, 2009, and nobody knew what it was. I went undiagnosed until 2011 or 2000. Actually, when it really got figured out was 2015.
So you had 6 years? 6 years of Lyme disease.
Yeah, wow. Misdiagnosed and mistreated. Like, the experts were treating me for everything under the sun except for Lyme. Nobody knew it was Lyme. Everybody, I had the symptoms. I had the most extreme and extraordinary confusing symptoms. They thought I had blood cancer. They were checking me for blood cancer. They were checking me for all these other disorders, like my red blood cell count, my white blood cell count were just completely out of whack. So I was being treated for everything. Then it wasn't that. Then they thought I had COPD or from welding and possibly polycythemia, which goes with that thrombocythemia, polycythemia, their blood issues. So I have something going on with my blood that they couldn't figure out. And it ended up being in 2011, we sent off my blood to California and it came back. I had like 11 or 12, maybe 13 Lyme disease and a whole pile of co-infections with it. So I had everything under the sun that you can get from a tick. And that explained everything. Like I was losing my sight, my left eye. I had the most insane symptoms that you could possibly have, the maximum extremity of the Lyme disease symptoms I had.
So joint pain, flu-like pain, stomach cramps.
And that's why I got into music, because I got so sick that, and being diagnosed with blood cancer, I thought I was a goner. Like I thought that was it. So a friend of mine asked me to come up and jam at a Army Navy in Selkirk at the jam. So I was at the point where I said, I'm going to say yes to everything. So I said yes, and it just took off. And I just kept doing it because I thought, I didn't, you know, at the time I thought, how much time do I have? So I'm just going to do everything I possibly can, make my bucket list exponential and get everything done and do whatever I want. And then I could say I left on a good note and did whatever I wanted to do, right? So that's what...
That's
what started music.
That's amazing. Just the root of the story, the going back. Any idea where you were when you found the tick? No bullseye, nothing like that?
Nothing. There was no wood tick on me. I mean, I'm an outside guy, right? I live in the forest as much as I possibly can. I live in the forest. I move to where the forest is. I'm always in the bush. So yeah. It could have happened anywhere.
So nope. 6 years. So walk me through it. So finally you got a diagnosis. You obviously have a family practitioner.
He's amazing.
Yeah. So walk me through it. How did all this happen? We'll get to the cannabis eventually, but walk me through your story.
So if we go back to 2008, I was going through a bad divorce and everything else. And anybody who has Lyme knows that if something traumatic happens and your immune system gets knocked down, the bug comes out rampant and he just devours your soul basically. While your immune system's down, he comes out and he parties. So when that was happening, that's when I really got sick, and that's when all the, I guess, the misdiagnosis started happening. My doctor is the guy's a genius, and he's really like he's one of those guys that goes the extra mile for his patient. He did endless research and he got to the bottom of it, but it took a long time. Every time he would send me to the experts, that's when the path got redirected. They were focused so hard on the symptoms rather than the cause that all they were looking at was treating the symptoms. So that was the premise of my misdiagnosis. But it got to the point where I was given a handy pass. Like I couldn't even walk. I couldn't walk a block.
Wow.
I would barely make it a block. I wanted to cut my feet off. That's how much pain they were in. And they're still, like, I still have the pain symptoms from it. I've had all kinds of herbal assistance throughout this whole journey. And the only thing that worked for the pain was the THC. I tried CBD, I tried everything. And the only thing that worked was THC, just the way it's transmitted, I guess.
You're a young man.
I'm 48.
So this all happened, what, in your late 30s then?
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, a young man given notice that you may have a deadly disease.
Back then I was super fit. I was into bodybuilding and MMA and everything. Like I was a machine. I'd work a 16-hour day and then still go to the gym for an hour or so after work. And then like I was nonstop. I was on the go 24/7. And then to be hit with that basically went from 100 miles an hour to zero overnight.
Yeah. So they treated you with antibiotics, like 6-7 weeks of antibiotics?
I did years of antibiotics because I had so many co-infections that you basically, Lyme disease is so insidious that one bacterium gets inside you and then multiplies. And if your immune system is strong, it'll combat it. And then that Lyme parasite forms a cyst around itself to protect itself. And it goes into hibernation until you're weak again. And then it comes out with vengeance. Wow. So it's like I would be treated for a bit and I'd be okay for a bit. And then I'd be really bad. I'd hit the wall or whatever. Like being an active guy, you have to regulate yourself. When they say Lyme disease is a self-managed disease, like they're not kidding. You have to pay attention to everything going on in your life, and then you just got to say no. Like, I just shut things down and take a break. You have to. There's nothing else you can do. If you don't, it's going to keep coming at you, and it's going to make it worse, and it's going to build up, and then you're going to get to the point where it's going to take you a year to combat it again. So it's so insidious, and it grows in you for like over a period of time. The only way to really combat it from all my reading and what my doctors come up with is you have to treat it the same way. You have to insidiously get rid of it. You can't bombard it, because then it goes into panic mode and films a cyst, and then you're done. You're not going to, the antibiotic cannot penetrate that cyst, right? So
okay,
it's kind of a, and it's worked, man. For 10 years of getting sick, it's 10 years of getting better, and I'm getting better every day, but it's 100% nutrition now. Like, I'm past pharmaceuticals and everything. I am 100% nutrition-based combating the bacterium for sure.
So let's talk about cannabis then. What's the journey that you discovered cannabis helps?
Well, here's going even further for the cannabis help. I'm an anti-cannabis guy. Like, I'm an anti-drug guy. And my whole life, I was brainwashed about how evil weed is. It's bad for you, and it's the devil's lettuce and all that, all the bullshit, basically. And I was dating a girl who had, I'd never smoked it. I was dating a girl who had smoked it and said, you know, this might work for you. And so I went to my doctor and I asked him about it. And he gave me CBD, subscription for CBD. And I used that for months with no benefit at all. It didn't help my feet at all. CBD didn't work. And we did a little bit of research after going for MRIs and stuff. They actually thought I had MS because of the symptoms and the MRI, the test results and all that stuff. So it was just, that wasn't the case.
Give me a timeline there. So 2016, you said you got diagnosed?
2015 diagnosed.
So when did your girlfriend hand you cannabis?
I was in 2018, I think.
So you were diagnosed, you were getting treatment. She hand you a joint, and you tried it. Then did you feel better? Your first
I still didn't try the joint yet. I had tried CBD for months, and then I went back to the doctor, and he said that the CBD will only work if it's local pain. But from what I had going on, it was neurological pain. So the feeling is in my feet, but the pain was caused in the nerve chain somewhere, directing the pain to my feet. After going back to see him, he said that the CBD is not going to work. You need the THC would work because it affects your brain and not like those. I don't understand it, but he said it would work. And he gave me some THC pills because I was at the time super pharmaceutical. You know, I didn't know anything about alchemy or anything. I didn't know anything about anything other than it came in a pill. You bought it in a supplement, especially being a bodybuilder, right? Supplements, your supplements.
Yeah.
And so the THC pill worked. But I didn't feel like it made me feel groggy and sluggish, and I didn't feel good at all. So that was when she came home with the idea and a little pre-rolled spliff there. And, you know, it ended up being that it worked. And I mean, other than getting really stoned for the very first time, the pain was gone. Like, my feet were a million times better.
Okay. And so you enjoyed that. And all of a sudden you said to yourself, oh my God.
Well, I said, well, that felt good. And then a buddy of mine had some, so he gave me a great big giant bag of it. And then that was it. And then I was using it for bedtime. So I would smoke it before bed. I'd watch a movie, and then I'd wake up in the morning and I'd still, my feet, my knees, my back, everything was still good. So it was working. I just carried on that way since then. So.
Wow. Your doctor is your family doc. So you've had your doctor for quite a while. Before the Lyme disease, and stuck with the same family doc. So how did your family doctor, when you said, I want to try cannabis, how was he or she with that?
It's amazing, because the whole time I was seeing him and I was going there with problem after problem, I kept telling him I didn't want to be on pills. So he would always give me the advice about nutrition. And I'd be like, yeah, I know about nutrition, but I'd kind of shrug it off. So when he found out I didn't want any pills at all, he really helped me with the, like, we buckled down and made everything about nutrition and lifestyle. And I don't have any pills right now. No pills, zero pills. The only thing I do right now is THC at night. That's it.
And you do it through a flower or pill?
Through a flower. Yeah. Okay. I don't want any pills. Like, I've converted, I've made butter and I've done all kinds of stuff, but it's usually just just smoke a joint at night.
Huh. I guess I'm wondering if there's something to do with the entourage effect. Like if you're taking the CBD pills with no real effect and the THC pills made you tired and you went to flower, I wonder if there's something to do with the entourage effect with it all being in one. I'm just pondering. Yeah,
I'm not sure. I know that even if I make edibles and stuff, I feel like I did with the THC pill. I have a hangover and, you know, you're groggy the next day. I never want to be groggy. I always want to be alert. So
have you found that any specific strain has helped you?
Definitely anything that's indica.
Okay.
Indica is the best. Sativa is good because then you can be active. But for me, it doesn't hammer the pain like the indica does. The indica gets rid of the pain. I've done some days where I worked 16, 17 hours and come home. And the prime example was I did 20 hours in a studio. And I came home and I was just spent. My back was finished and I was still supposed to go out and watch a buddy's show. And the show was actually a buddy of mine, after work ritual. Imagine that. So I'm laying on the couch and I'm like, I guess I'm not going. And my brother was staying there for a bit and he rolled the joint and brought it to me. I was laying on the couch, like crippled, couldn't move. And I smoked the joint. And then an hour later I was sitting up and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to the rock show. So it's crazy, but it's magic, man. It's definitely medicine.
Do you belong to any Lyme disease groups, or do you belong to any forums? Or
yeah, there's hundreds. I mean, I got a lot of flack during pandemic about my belief about the whole thing. And what nobody understands is that the majority of my friend base on Facebook, and I'm at like 4,990 something, with people dropping off steady because I guess I'm abrasive. Probably 85% of those people are Lyme disease patients that I've met through the forums and the groups, right? I'm in a documentary about Lyme disease called The Monster Inside Me. It's out now. You can see it. It's a pay-per-view one, but I think it's worth watching. There's a lot of really interesting information in there. But it's a different monster, man. Lyme disease is a different animal.
And lots of people are using it. We've interviewed somebody, Sue, earlier in Saskatoon, and she's a Lyme patient and it's helping her. She finds that every so often she has to take 2 weeks off.
Yeah. I take a lot of time off too. I mean, for me, for singing, anytime I have a gig or a practice, I take time off. If I have a gig, I probably don't smoke it for a week to 2 weeks.
Okay.
We recorded a new album that might be coming out right away. I've got a whole bunch of new music. We got a new album. When I went out to Edmonton to record this new album, it was pretty much a whole month I didn't smoke, just so I could go in there and give her everything I got.
And is that because when you're using cannabis, it just makes you groggy, or it's helping with the pain?
It's for me, it's just throat irritation. So when I sing from my toes. So if I cough or something like that the day before, if I have a big coughing fit, then the next day I feel it when I'm trying to sing. So
okay, so inhalation works better than ingestion. You're saying you're using oils. Do you try oils? Like, does that help with it at all when you eat it?
It does, but then I have the hangover again, So
okay.
I'm stuck. I can do the edibles and they work great, but then I got to make sure I have the day off the next day or whatever, and not be, because otherwise I'm groggy.
Okay.
But maybe it's the dose. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
So. All right. Well, but it's interesting to talk to you about this because, like, I mean, no offense, man, but you look like a guy that's been to cannabis for like 40 years, right?
I know. Ask every time I go to the airport, that's what they assume. I'm pulled over every time.
Yeah.
It's a constant thing. Everybody just assumes that I'm this big pothead. I mean, I am now, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't for my entire life until I was, you know, late 30s. And even then, I didn't start using it daily for medicinal purposes until the last probably 3-4 years. It was, you know, a little bit here and there for the pain, but now it's like I use it every day, every night, unless I'm singing or whatever, right?
Right. So as a Lyme patient, I guess at your level, if it wasn't diagnosed for like 5-6 years, my understanding of Lyme is that it's going to be very difficult. You're going to have recurring for the rest of your life, I guess.
Yeah, chronic Lyme. I'm diagnosed with chronic Lyme and co-infections. So with the Lyme infection, because everyone just thinks that you get bit by a wood tick and it's one parasite, they carry hundreds of micro parasites, including a parasite that exists inside the Lyme parasite. The Lyme parasite has a a microparasite inside it that has been linked to Alzheimer's. So it's like you get bit by wood tick, you're it's like Russian roulette with a bacteria, an evil genius bacteria. So
yeah, that's, man, that's too bad. I that's too bad. Anything I haven't asked you? Anything you wanted to make sure people knew about cannabis and Lyme?
Well, cannabis, Lyme disease is a monster. So the biggest thing with Lyme disease is cannabis is a great pain reliever for me because of the neurological pain that I have. I don't know if it's for everybody, but it definitely helps for me. And if you have Lyme disease, and if, I think if you have Lyme disease and you have foot or back pain, I think it's going to help you. One of the things with Lyme disease that helped me the most is if you have Lyme disease and you don't know how to treat it and it's confusing, look up Candida and treat yourself for Candida because it's the same kind of bug. Anything that will grow yeast will grow Lyme disease, will grow Candida. So if you treat your body as though you're infected with Candida, everything, your whole life will change. You got to remove the sugars that feed yeast, that grow yeast. So okay, that's the big thing.
Okay.
That's my biggest advice to anybody who's suffering like I am and was, is you got to do the pain management, because as soon as you control your pain management, you can do things. Yeah. You know, the biggest, I think the biggest clut, I don't know what it is. The biggest thing that holds people back with Lyme disease is the mobility. Once you're in pain, you can't do anything, and then you gain weight and you get depressed, and it just becomes a really vicious cycle. So if you can get your mobility under control and you can do things, you're going to fix the rest of it, because your body will start working properly.
Cool.
That's
all right, man.
That's the biggest advice. That was my big thing. And I lost like 70 pounds in the last year, and I feel better than I've ever felt in probably the last 10 years.
Cool. And going to your band, you guys got gigs lined up for the summer? You got a tour figured out?
Well, we were working on a few things, kind of got on it late, jumped on the festivals late. So we have one gig lined up and then nothing till the fall. I'm kind of waiting. I have a few things being released, and I wanted to bombard everybody with what's coming out, and yeah, then book gigs. So we may not hit festivals and stuff till next year. Okay. We're going to book theaters this year, like the WAC. We're definitely going to book that. We're going to book as many theaters as we can this winter to get the show on the road, the literal Southern rock show on the road.
That's great. I really enjoyed the last time you guys were here. It was a good show. It was a good time.
Awesome.
Yeah,
we'll have to do it again, and maybe we'll come and shoot the shit with you before we play.
I guess, again, I want to reiterate, Brent used some terminology that I wasn't really familiar with about talking about cyst formations and that sort of stuff. My understanding is that this is caused by a bacterium that's very similar to the syphilis bacterium. So there are similar symptoms from it, such as the Alzheimer's he mentioned, and joint pain, and I won't be able to pronounce the Greek words.
I think it's Borrelia furgundi. I'm not quite there, but I'm close.
Bordorfi, yes.
Bordorfi.
Yeah, and it's, go ahead.
No, that's as close as I'm getting.
But I guess, it comes in stages. There's stage one, stage two, stage three, the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary, which is a word I have trouble with. And I guess after being diagnosed, 4 or 5 years after symptoms started, he's safely into the third stage of this disease.
Yeah, and just to reiterate, he went through it, but think about this. He started getting sick with something in 2008. It wasn't till like 2015-ish that, they had it nailed down. And along the way, they thought blood cancer, COPD, polycythemia, multiple sclerosis. Like, it was just all these weird symptoms that, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And it's just, don't want to see anybody go through that, but it just gives you an idea about how insidious, we're overusing it, but how insidious Lyme disease is, because it can sort of mask itself as so many other things.
Mm-hmm. And again, from the research I've been doing, he's on the right track. It seems to me that after a course of strong antibiotics for a long period of time, and most antibiotics, depending on the infection you have, 5 to 10 days, depending on the respiratory. Yeah. But we're talking about weeks.
Usually under two weeks is kind of the maximum for all quote unquote normal infections.
Yes. Like when you get something this insidious, you're on it for several weeks and sometimes a lifetime, I noticed. But I guess, you know, talked about balanced diets and all that. And, you know, again, this is not a Lyme specific show. But it is, you know, if it is a disease that we Canadians and North Americans need to be aware of, and Europeans. But anything else you want to say about Lyme? Do you want to just duck into the cannabis?
I want to go into cannabis.
Let's do it.
So, this is anecdotes, not, but it's just interesting that, you know, you mentioned Sue Litwin a little bit during the interview, and we'll mention her again. Sue has said several times that THC is the part of cannabis that helps her with her Lyme symptoms. Because, you know, we talk about other conditions where the CBD seems to be more of the quote-unquote medicinal part. So Sue has said several times, you know, emphatically that it's the THC. And just interesting, Brent said the same thing. And the other, because, you know, I'm a pharmacist, him talking about the difference between inhaled THC and oral THC and how he found the inhaled was better. And, you know, I obviously do not have the end-all be-all answer of why, but it's just interesting to remember that they do act differently in the body. So the simple bits is inhaled, goes into the body faster, also leaves faster. The drug in the body kind of changes because when you inhale it, you get pretty much THC unchanged, more or less, into the bloodstream when you inhale it. When you eat it, it goes to the liver and starts the metabolizing, and you get a lot more of one of the metabolites, which is 11-hydroxy-THC. Now, there's other metabolites too, but when people talk about getting a quote-unquote different high off of inhaled versus eating, that's true because the 11-hydroxy-THC actually is psychoactive as well. You know, maybe it's medicinal as well. Who knows? But just I'm sure someone knows. Trevor doesn't know. It's just interesting. You do actually get different cannabinoids, subtly different, in your system, whether you inhale or you goes orally. And the other is the bioavailability. Sorry, pharmacist gets a little geeky on this, but that's how much of what you take in goes into your bloodstream. So when you're inhaling, it's kind of all over the map. It goes, you know, the study I was reading, you know, they're estimating between 2 and 56%. Oh, that's a huge range. Well, they said, yeah, but it's really hard to control for number of puffs, time in between puffs, how long you held it into your lungs, your lung volume, and even when they literally had people have a computer paced smoking. So, you know, the computer said, okay, inhale now, hold till the beep, stop, and then repeat. Even when they did computer pace like that, they had huge differences between the different subjects, how much THC got in them. So it's just interesting. So you can see from a medical point of view, another reason why we quote unquote like the oral, because it's easier to figure out exactly how much is going in. But for people who really like the THC, need the THC, want the THC, find it helps them, more of it probably goes into your system, goes in faster and stays as THC longer than if you do it orally. Now, are any of those relevant in this case? I don't know, but it's just something to keep in mind about the way we get THC, well, the other cannabinoids, into the body actually could affect how it's going to affect the body.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I what I find interesting is, once again, Lyme disease, and Brent says it, but also from what I read, is a disease that needs to eventually be taken care of alone. Once they've given you the course of antibiotics, it is diet driven. How you keep yourself well, keeping your omegas up, keeping your vitamins up, but keeping your nutrition's well, that's important to Lyme disease. Going back to cannabis, we've often talked about it, how difficult it is for Western medicine to use cannabis because it's so individualized. The last episode we talked about I was asking why they're not drawing biomarkers or lab serums on people when they are treating with cannabis. It doesn't seem to be part of the care when doctors are using cannabis as medicine. And I guess it has to do with the study you're saying. It's so individualized that maybe it doesn't even matter what the results are. I mean, I would argue that if an individual, if you're treating your patients as individuals, you should have an individualized understanding of the biomarkers in the body and results. But I'm not a practitioner nor a lab guy. But this is what I found interesting with Lyme disease. You got to take care of it yourself. People are using cannabis. Sue Litwin, episode 31. And episode 65, we talked to the Lyme warrior, Sue. And so this, I guess, is our second episode on Lyme. But she also talks again using cannabis individualized for her. That's an interesting study that you read there. It just, again, just says how difficult plant medicine is.
Yeah. And this was, again, kind of a geeky. And I'll post a link in case anyone wants to read it. The other thing that I got a giggle out of, it was done by the NIH, so it was done in the U.S., and they don't really have access to cannabis, so that was interesting. So they were talking about, and we were giving people cannabis cigarettes with 3% THC, going, 3%? Do they even sell a 3% in Canada? But anyway.
That would be hemp,
wouldn't
it?
For those of you who don't, well, maybe, but anyway, so yeah, it, for those of you who haven't been inhaling lately, they're much higher percentage THC here. You're up to 10, 20. I think some of them are pushing 30% now. But yeah, so it was just the they're looking at what we call the pharmacodynamics, pharmacokinetics, sort of how it goes into the body through the different routes, where it goes in the body and how it leaves the body, which was all, I'd heard bits of it before, but it was nice to sort of see it all in one study.
The other thing that popped out for me is indica, and how indica seems to be the medicine of choice for a lot of the people I've been interacting with lately. I've made a few friends locally, and one is a true cannabis culture fella who has been growing for like 25 years, and he started growing his own medicine about 5 years ago, specifically, and he talks religiously, passionately about his land race indica strains and how truly they help him with his muscle ache. So I found that interesting, that definitely indica is a strain the people like. Also, I'm finding that a lot of...
Well, and I'm going to jump in and keep your hate mail to a minimum. This is just kind of a question from some of the other people we've talked to and some of the breeders and whatnot. My understanding, don't hate me, this is kind of more a question, is there's not really an indica or sativa anymore. Like, you know, it's even before the relatively recent crossbreeding, they're all kind of hybrids now, was my understanding. Now, I'm not saying that indicas now don't have more of terpene X and sativas more of terpene Y, but I thought, my understanding, and you know, if I'm wrong, tell us, and maybe we'll interview you and find out more. Maybe we finally will get that plant biologist on, but I thought it was getting very, saying indica and sativa wasn't necessarily telling us all that much about the plants anymore because everything's been so intermixed. But again, maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to say I know this.
Okay.
I think from a perspective from commercial cannabis that we're buying at stores and dispensaries, I think it's going to be very hard-pressed to say that this is a true landrace indica, a true landrace sativa. Now, when we talk to our hemp growers, now they're definitely growing sativas, right? And no crossbreds, no hybrids. So hemp growing is definitely a sativa plant. When I talk to cannabis culture people, when I talk to guys that are growing their own, you know, we talked to the Green Beaver and Paul and the stuff that he's archiving. They do have strains that are landrace. And what I mean by landrace is that this is a Hindu Kush indica from genetics that has been followed for the last 10 years. I met a guy who breeds his own, and he's very opinionated cannabis culture guy, and I have a lot of these conversations. They're you know them when you get into it. When you get into a conversation with a true cannabis culture guy, you know you're in the game, and they're very assertive with their opinions. He's got some land race that is indica, and when I go to look at his garden, you can see the difference. When you look at his hybrids that he's bred himself, and you look at the land race, there's a difference in how the plant grows, there's a difference in how the flower grows, and there's a difference in the effect you get from the plant. So I guess what I will say, Trevor, is I think in the commercial trade, when we go to a dispensary and you're asking for a true indica, I think that's rare. And again, you know, I haven't been to a dispensary, and I haven't bought cannabis at a dispensary in probably 2 years, maybe. I don't know. If I do walk into a dispensary, it's for a road story. I think there's two ways to look at this. From the cannabis culture, I think land race is still out there. Commercial stuff, I think from the scientist perspective, and then you get into the conversations with the biochemists, and then they will tell you that there's no difference between strains. But when you talk to somebody who's into the cannabis culture, we had the conversation with the Victoria Cannabis Buyers Club, and how they, as a cannabis culture group, will test the cannabis themselves to see how the cannabis relates to medicinal, which throws the whole concept of Western medicine out the door, and I think is what really frustrates practitioners in you know, normal medicine, is that the right word, or just standard medicine, or as a pharmacist, is that, oh yeah, you use cannabis, yeah, okay, all right. You know, whereas you talk to the guy that's using cannabis and he's got it down to the strain, the amount, it's like they're their own chemists.
Yeah, no, and
botanists.
As a pharmacist, I have no problem with that. I guess the problem, even if if me or a family member was using this as medicine, the part, honestly, I still struggle with is the lack of standardization. You know, are you getting the same quote unquote medicine from one batch to another, from one plant to another, from one year to another? And that's sort of been something that pharmacy has been improving. You know, yes, send hate mail this way, but that's what we've been improving over the last 100 years. Like, even like thyroid pills, you know, they used to literally be made up from ground up pig thyroid glands, and you know, even stuff coming from the company would be, the amount of thyroid hormone in it would vary from one batch to another. And now we've isolated the actual hormone, and now for sure you've got the same amount in every pill, every batch, every month, every year. Well, cannabis is the other way again, where, you know, is it the same active ingredient, if you want to call it that, from one part of the plant? You know, we've talked about the difference between the crown and a part way down and the bottom. Is it different in one plant? Is it different from one plant to another? Is it different from one crop to another? Is it different from one growing year to another? And on the one hand, you could say, as long as the patient is happy, you know, with symptom control, who cares? On the other hand, if they aren't happy, why were they happy last month and they're not happy this month? It gets harder to figure out.
It does. It's fascinating. It's fascinating, but what I'm learning, those who use cannabis as medicine, those who grow their own medicine, man, they are knowledgeable people. But as a nurse, I'm like you, the scientific part of my brain goes, but then the other side of my brain is that you're getting benefit from this, it's working for you, how can I say any different? But you're right, if we isolate THC from a sativa plant, we isolate THC from an indica plant, it's THC identified in a microscope, however, it's THC, but are those molecules in the body doing something a little different because they've come from different plants? I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's more likely the other stuff around the THC, but yeah, probably a argument for a better day. Okay, I've had my little spiel about the smoking versus oral. That was really what I was, my part of the digression. Did you have something else you wanted to say about Lyme or anything else?
No, I just thought I wanted to tell Brent's story. I've promised him a story pre-pandemic. I just think it's fascinating. And the fact that I'm living with ticks daily, I thought it was a timely story. And I love hearing how people self-medicate using cannabis.
Absolutely.
It's why we're doing this podcast, right? It's to figure out how cannabis helps people. And here's a story. He has given us a song, so we'll be playing it. It's one of his own.
I was going to say, hopefully one of his.
Yeah, it's one of his own, so we'll plop that up and Renee will find it. And I guess I'm Kirk Nyquist. I'm the registered nurse.
I'm Trevor Shufeld. I'm the pharmacist.
And we are Reefer Madness, the podcast. You know, on a side note, did I tell you that I had a friend of mine say, Alexa, play Reefer Madness, the podcast? And guess what?
And what happened?
It came up.
So excellent.
You can play us by just asking Alexa to play Reefer Madness, the podcast, on all of your podcast platforms. And come on, if you listen to us, give us a rating. Get on that platform and tell people how much you enjoy us. And if you do that, let us know you did so we can cut and paste it and share it in social media. Participate with us and get our name out there. Tell two people that you listen to us and that we're at least mildly entertaining.
Yeah, word of mouth is still the best. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll talk to you again next time.
Cheers.
Well, that was another good one, guys. It's Renee here back at the studio. Before we go on with the song that closes off the show, we'd like to acknowledge that we produce our shows on Treaty 2 territory and the homeland of the Métis. We pay our respects to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this land, and we reaffirm our relationships. The song that Brent chose for us to close the show off with is Still Smokin' by his band Reckon So. And so that's what we're going out with. Have a good one.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next.
I'm still smoking. I'm still burning.
I'm going to stop the recording. Let me just stop.
Recording stopped.
There you go.